Hail fellow, well met. I'm Mouse, and this is a podcast about characters at play and the players who create them. Our guest this week is Kitty Stuholsky. He's a caster of several defunct pods and a game Imagineer. Hi, Kitty. Thank you for being on the show.
Hi, Mouse. Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Awesome. So, tell me about your character.
Okay. When I was thinking about your show, I don't actually have a lot of characters that see play more than once. I do a lot of what I have recently found out is called American Freeform LARP. There are several other names that are similar to that, being like story games and parlor LARP. I guess that's a little bit different, but that's too much for me to handle. I show up to a game, I play a character for 2 to 4 hours, and then we wipe it from our minds and from our bodies. So the character that I wanted to talk about today is a character that I played about a couple months ago in a very intense game called The Holiday Party that my friend Banana Chan made and ran in New York City at the Lovecraft Bar. It was an afternoon LARP about the Devil's Office Holiday Party. And the character that I played was named Rage, and they were the department head or the manager of the Wrath Division.
Holy shit.
Yeah, there was a division for each of the seven deadly sins, and there were then subordinates amongst those. There were also other staff members, other like GMs that were taking the role of Lucifer, Lucifer's children, which, ugh. And then just other like journalists or the HR representative. It was an office holiday party.
Okay, so I have to step in and interject that you are my first guest who is bringing forward a character in a live action role play setting. So far, it's been mostly tabletop. And
yes.
a lot of what we've been talking about is working against restrictions or the friction with the rules of a tabletop setting. And already, like, you've kind of blown my mind with the play setting that you've described. And really, like, I'm happy to learn and I'm happy to listen, but like, it seems like this is such an incredibly fertile creative space for role playing.
Yeah, actually, you touched on my dark secret of why I really find a fondness in LARPing, is that when I play more dense or more like mechanically heavy tabletop games, usually I don't actually read the rules. What happens is I try to get a feel for the tone and the theme that everyone wants to construct together, like that collaborative story that everyone is interested in telling, and then saying, this is what I would like to do. Someone who's actually read it, you figure out how to make that happen. I'm imagining it's an obnoxious thing that you probably shouldn't have more than one or two of us in your tabletop group, but here we are. So with LARPing, it is entirely about that connection that you have with the other players, right? That all there is the story. And the world that you can build within that, there is the environment. There's the environment, there is, again, like an atmosphere that's kind of created either physically or just in the way that people express themselves or their physicality, maybe the way that they're all dressed. We all dressed very nicely, given that it was, in fact, our office holiday party and the devil was going to be there.
Yeah, and I will spare our listeners the clicking of the keyboard as I Google the Lovecraft Bar, but I can imagine the setting might have had left a distinct impression.
Yeah, we were in the basement of this place, and okay, to be fair, it had drinks on the menu with names that I could not pronounce, so I just pointed at them and let people go on their way. But as Lovecraft of themed bar as this was, when I walked in the door, they were playing Blink 182, so I don't know if they're really putting their whole effort into this.
Yeah, they weren't playing Metallica's Call of Cthulhu. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Who knows? But yeah, so we all, so I was actually brought in as a staff member. And this was actually kind of interesting because my character, Rage, was actually the first character I've ever played that someone else, another person, not the game designer themselves, created. It was a situation where someone backed out and I needed to fill in the role. I had already signed up and had a character who was working for the Wrath Department, who I think I had the description for was a pile of snakes in a suit. And I still like that image, and I might use that later on for another game, but I feel like having fancy pile of snakes is just good. It's a good image.
But you got a promotion.
Yes, exactly. I did. I got promoted into a completely new being. As a staff member in this, it was my task, well, one, to be given someone else's sheet, and then kind of corral everybody and do my best to help provide scenes for the people who were working underneath me. This was also my first time doing this. This was a bit of a GM type role in LARP, which more or less means that you are kind of assisting people to find their own scenes that they can have. This may be that there's a couple of like ongoing story pieces. Maybe the devil comes out and says something like,
"There's been talk about closing down one of the deadly sins just for cutting costs."
And then that just causes this big uproar, and we need to talk about it and what sins are going to get merged, and sending people out to go collect information or trying to start new projects to try to show to Lucifer that, hey, Wrath's still in. Everyone wants to be angry.
I can imagine this involves a lot of concentration. Like, you have to be very present of everyone's needs as a player.
Yes, and it's very tricky to do that, especially in a larger, in a large game. This was about, I'd estimate around 30, 40 people, because when you have a game, even a game that's even like 8 to 10 people, there's a phrase called the fog of LARP, in which you will not know everything that is happening around you, and that's okay. You have your piece that you are currently interested in, and there may be things happening that may catch your interest, or you can just choose maybe not to engage in that, and that's fine. There is still a story portion or something of interest that you can engage in. That's great. In this case, I kind of had to keep an eye out for all of my young coworkers and the like. Fortunately, I didn't have that many to corral. Some of the other groups, I think like Greed had like 8 or 9. I think I only had 2. But yeah, so in this case, it was just trying to spread anger in the world. That was ultimately what the goal of this game, or one of the major goals was for about half of it, was how can we, as a division, promote our sin in the world today.
So, did Donald Trump come up?
Oh, heavens no. there was... Oh, actually, some of the things that we came up with, like, I feel so gross for some of the things that we made. I think, like, one of them was about building call-out culture as the new phenomenon.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So like something straight people do.
So yes, it is. It's going to trickle down from Tumblr into all of the other forms of social media into real life. Although I guess it already kind of has happened. Ugh, now I feel sad. Anyway, so in this game, I was given this character, and again, this was someone else's character, and I believe the only piece of information that came with this was, I am the head of the Wrath Department. I have been here since this company began. So I am senior angry guy. That's all I have to work with. Now, this was incredibly difficult for me, because I do my best to be a positive force on everyone around me every day. So this was very much a case of playing a character that I could not, or maybe actively chose not to maybe empathize with, no, relate to.
Yeah, and that's got to be doubly difficult, because like being an angry person and expressing yourself that way like is not what makes a good boss.
No, absolutely not. And it's also like there's something that I keep in mind. Feel free to stop me here, because I'm going to talk a little bit of technicalities in the LARPaverse. There's been something that's been on my mind since there was a talk that I went to a couple months ago, in which someone said the phrase, "There's not enough LARP tops," in that there needs to be, in which people need to consider building scenes for other people or throwing out ideas of interest for other people to latch onto and then build. I guess that's a very common improv skill. You don't necessarily need to be the funny person. You can build steps for other people to really shine. And in this case, being angry isn't a great way to help other people build. If anything, it's going to merely shut people down. And so it was a very difficult idea at first to try to express that sort of rage, that sort of wrath, that sort of contempt in a way that was measured enough. Also, to an extent that I wouldn't just throw out my voice within 30 minutes. So it was interesting because I think this is something that happens in a lot of games that I play in, is that the character. Well, I think this a lot of role playing people, I think, can probably relate to this, is that you build your character, you internally build the character yourself as actions are happening. Like, oh, this might be an interesting thing, an interesting direction that they may take, without it being like a complete 180 turn. That there is something there that, when put into this situation, this character may find out a little bit something about themselves. So in this case, I kind of decided to, like, what was the best way I could intimidate someone without making them afraid? Now, this is key for a couple of reasons. The first one, kind of as we were describing before, was allowing people a place where they feel that where they can interact, where it's not just simply one person running the conversation. Because if someone's yelling at you, it's probably not a lot of. You're probably not confident that if you say something to them, they will listen and process to it.
I used to do haunted houses, and it's kind of that situation, like, where, like, even though you know it's fake and you know that, like, they're not supposed to touch you, that can still bleed over to the experience.
Oh, absolutely. And that kind of brings me to my second point here, is that I'm a pretty large guy. Like, I have pretty big shoulders. Also, I'm a tallish dude. Having someone kind of glower over you and be very, or sorry, as I say, you to any player, and be aggressive, like very verbally aggressive, very physically intimidating, that can be a real safety concern. And one thing that I've been very excited about, and very honestly, I feel so warm about, is that in a lot of the games that I have played in, a lot of the freeform LARPs, even a lot of the tabletop games that I played in New York City, player emotional safety is such a priority that it makes me feel so good. And in this case, like, being very aware that here is the image that I present here, and making sure that people don't feel like that I am going to attack them, or that I remind them of a really bad situation that they've had in the past. And so those things are all in my mind when trying to present this manifestation of anger, which in a way kind of I ended up trying to channel. I think the number one influence that I had was, strangely enough, the devil in O Brother, Where Art Thou, where it's a character that is just doesn't raise their voice, doesn't really express anger or, like, derision, but there's just this presence that's there. There's an aura that is just in this monotone voice, where if you knew that if you did not say, or if, sorry, I keep saying you, that's not an appropriate pronoun, in that in a player, if a player makes any sort of maybe misstep, that monotone might switch.
Wow, so that's a very creating a sinister vibe or a sinister environment to exist in.
Yeah, and in general, that was already present amongst all of the different sins that were there. There was already, like, there was the greed manager who was impeccably dressed, but also had this very much like Ghost of Christmas Present kind of attitude, just in kind of reverse, instead of sharing everything, just wanting to take everything. I remember there was someone in the gluttony department that I knew when the game kicked off, because they walked up to me with a bottle of squeeze mayonnaise and said, "Hey, you want a hit of this?" And I said, no, I don't want a hit of that. And they said, suit yourself. Popped the cap open, took a squirt right into their mouth, and then walked off.
That's commitment.
It absolutely is. It took me until the very end, until someone told me that it was actually full of vanilla pudding, that the entire time I was blown away. I was floored. I was convinced. They sold it.
I don't know if that variable changes how shocking of an action that is. That's incredible, and I'm fascinated by the tension between yourself and also the settings, or your own concern for the emotional well-being of the players. Because when I play tabletops, I typically will choose a character that's sort of a reflection of my inner self. That's maybe my fantasies or my hopes and dreams. And I don't know if I've ever felt that same level of concern for how I'm playing, because it's like, if my character dies, you can just re-roll. But like, in a certain way, this character is me. Like, mm-hmm. It seems almost callous to say, it's like, oh, it's just a, just re-roll it, just create a whole new personality from scratch. Or maybe it's, I don't know, I'm too sensitive, and I come from more of like a storyteller's background, but,
Well, no, there's always that emotional connection that you can have, even if it is a character that at least upon creation, a person, like a player, may not necessarily feel a very strong relation to. But just over time, I mean, because of the person who is making the decisions from that character, they are just subconsciously going to weave in parts of themselves into that, such that even for like a very villainous or just dastardly character who the person may not like ever want to relate to, there's still going to be parts of that person in there, even if it is not
their dark self
or whatever, but rather just parts of their decision making and parts of how they feel about other people and how they process information and conflict. Like, that's all still there.
Yeah, and it definitely seems like even in creating a character for a pop-up type setting, or maybe a one-time LARP that only lasts a couple hours, you've put a considerable amount of thought and consideration into how you created this character, just in how you approach that sense of menace that they project towards the other players.
That's also my personal style of preparing far too much, or at least not necessarily in terms of like physical preparation, but rather just this more like emotional preparation. Like in this case, because I had more of a staffer role in this game, I definitely felt like I had this responsibility that I needed to show up with an idea of what I wanted. And right off the bat, identifying right up front of what the risks of playing the character that I was given was, I think was a big benefit. I guess it was very beneficial to me in that it's kind of like dancing in a way, where I tell people that the most important thing for dancing is identifying which parts of my body are the most dangerous on the dance floor and corralling them a bit. So in this case, it's a bit like that, but emotionally.
Not swinging your arms at a...
Right, when you're not 90% elbow like I am. And so, like, in this case, like, working off of the attitude that I have that any game or, you know, activity, you could probably spread this out much farther, any game is not as important as the people playing it. And that's a center point to how I make characters. Now, actually, it was kind of interesting in the act, so I'm going to fast forward a bit during this, is that once the game ended, No, again, I can fill in a little bit of the blanks in between the beginning and the end here. In the end, people came up to me afterward and said, and kind of congratulated me. And they said, like, oh my God, like, you were terrifying. One of my friends even came up to me and was like, I was kind of concerned that you were actually upset at me. That was certainly not what I was going for, especially because there were a lot of people there at this game that I did not know. And so when that's the first impression that they get of me is as this looming monster that gives that, like, their glare from across the room is might be enough to end a conversation. Well, I just want to provide smiles and be cute for everybody.
See, this brings up, like, I wonder, you were so convincing, but like is this rewarding as a consequence of play because you did inhabit that role so effectively, or do you have maybe some apprehension or a negative experience coming from that? Or is it a mix of both?
I think it was definitely a mix of both initially. I think over time, I've kind of accepted them just as the compliments as they are, because, I mean, honestly, people have to play the villains in movies. So, like, if that is just a skill set of, hey, you do a pretty good job of being disliked. Like, hey, super. That's oh, you know what? I'll take that. I'll take that as a compliment. But it's funny because I think there was a period of time, maybe it'd been 3 or 4 months earlier this year, where every character I played was a villain of some sort. Also, I think most of them were non-human, so I was wondering if I was starting to get typecast a little bit. Yeah, it's like the equivalent of someone who, like, only plays like an elvish druid or the ranger. But in this case, it is, no matter it seems what the game is, if there is some supernatural flair to it, this person just winds up playing some demonic entity, even when they're just assigned that role. Like, eh, I guess that's what's going to be on the back of my trading card.
So I wonder, it seems like you know what you're talking about, and I'm someone who I've never gotten to experience live action roleplay. It just wasn't really available to me until recently when I've gotten much, much more personally interested in roleplaying. Like, what would you recommend as a play setting for someone who is totally new but curious?
Oh gosh.
That might be like a Pandora's box.
No, so actually it's funny that you say that, because I have a post-it note right here on my tray here that has some of that information. That if someone has, for people that have some tabletop experience, there's some games that have come out recently that do a really good job of blending features of like LARP's, like, scene creation with more like tabletop conflict resolution mechanics. I know Jason Morningstar's Fiasco is a really good example of that, and I. Oh my gosh, like, that game is phenomenal, and I would recommend.
I've heard very, very good things from multiple people about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's because it's very much like it is. It's a game in which characters are created collaboratively, in which the relationships are built first, and then characters are built around those relationships, which really provides that baseline for everyone to work together with. And such that they can, there's something right off the bat that they can communicate with. It's a phenomenal. I really like it. There is a really amazing resource that I think I was going to pitch eventually at some point during this episode, called Golden Cobra. It's a small freeform design competition that happens once a year. At the time of recording, it is currently going on. Although I think maybe by time of release in November, the new year of Golden Cobras will be out. It is. All the games submitted from Golden Cobra are available for free at goldencobra.org, and they all are either they're designed with the constraints that such that, like, requires, like, maybe only 3 to 5 people and can be done in less than an hour. So it's a very solid introduction to a lot of the different topics and a lot of the different means of play that can happen through freeform. I mean, just in general, like, tonally, much like with tabletop, I mean, tonally, games can be completely all over the place. I know, like, the first game I ever played was a game called Sea Dracula, in which everyone plays as animal lawyers who have to fight their case through actual dance fights.
Oh, I'm sorry that the peyote I took at the beginning of the podcast is kicking in.
So, given that was my introduction to the medium, there's that definite influence in the things that I try to create as well, which on the far away from that, there are games that I have played in that are like you are or all the players are citizens, like they are just citizens in a war-torn country, stranded in a town under siege, doing their best to try to find supplies during the night. And hey, maybe their loved ones aren't going to come back. Hey,
wow,
that's a world away from dancing animal lawyers.
I'm learning so much, and I'm so excited to dig more into this world. And maybe I don't know. Maybe I'll start LARPing.
Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how my like anxiety copes with that. But you know, I'm
right. There definitely is a performative aspect to it, and I know that it has certainly helped me in terms of like to help with nervousness that I get in terms of just being performative in nature, especially amongst strangers. Like, you know, I like to tell stories at parties where I know everybody, but when I don't, I feel like the stakes are much higher then.
Yeah, I mentioned I used to work haunted houses, and I was the worst spook. I was the worst ghoul because I could not cross that barrier into really performing in a role that I was like super uncomfortable with. I'm ready to get back out there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, I definitely recommend either looking into Fiasco, which is, again, it blends a lot of really good mechanics and it really just got a lot of good just conversations into like a really well-themed game that I think a lot of people really enjoy. Especially because I think that a lot of games, there is this kind of community, there is this sort of I've heard the word calibration get used for people playing with one another, such that if someone maybe feels very nervous about what they're contributing to a scene, or if they're contributing enough, or maybe they feel that what they are bringing to a scene might be making people nervous, there's absolutely room in a lot of games and a lot of groups for either just like out of character sort of moment of check-in of like, hey, is everyone okay here? Or providing additional like support for someone in the middle of a scene or to break a scene and the like. So I think there are means there to help facilitate either like newcomers or even people that have been around for a while that may just maybe not be something to facilitate for veteran players who maybe just aren't having a good day.
That sounds incredible. Thank you, Kitty. We're getting into the part of the show where it is snack time.
Yum.
A segment where I just share something nice that's making me happy, and I want to pass it around. So this week's snack is another YouTube series called Monster Factory. It's put out by the video game site Polygon. And I don't really play video games, and I wouldn't be even caught dead watching someone else play a video game on YouTube and talk over it. But this is a really unique series of videos where two brothers, Justin and Griffin, I mean, God, if you're listening to this podcast, you know who they are. But they play games with really robust character creation models and try and make as hideous a character as they can, or really unique characters, like stretching the physics to their very limits. And like they have a whole series of videos on the online game Second Life that is just so magnificent, and it's so funny. So yeah, thank you for being on the show, Kitty.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Do you have
Can I add something really quick to the Monster Factory?
Absolutely.
But because I adore that series for one of the main reasons is that it really kind of breaks away from what I feel is like the intentionality that kind of dominates in games, that there is one way to play a video game. And I absolutely feel that is not the case, that you can create fun in many other ways just through your own means. And I think Monster Factory is like one of the great inspirations, I think, for other people to try that out themselves.
Yeah, their Second Life like videos are so glorious because they go into it knowing nothing about it, but they're just so open-minded about like whatever is being thrown at them, which is everything and anything in Second Life. Like, they'll just take it, and like, yeah, it's like, it's a really joyful experience watching them like be just baffled by the possibilities of that really, really demented game that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you want to plug?
So actually, by the time this episode comes out, the aforementioned Golden Cobras will be out, and I will have a game in there. So again, I'm assuming by the time this comes out, it's at goldencobras.org, and look for the game called Heart of the Dungeon, in which I wrote a game about people playing as monsters in a dungeon who are trying to set up their Sundere dungeon keeper with a hero that they have a crush on.
Oh my god. That sounds really fun. I will definitely check that out. I hope you all do as well. Thanks again, Kitty.
Thank you very much, Mouse. I really liked being here.
Yeah, and thanks to Philomela for the song I Am a Fire from the album Sapphire Chamber, which is the intro and outro music for this episode. I don't necessarily believe in karma, and whether you do or don't, I want you to go out there in the world and earn those critical success roles. Bye.